Hello, my name's Marcus Speller from The Football Ramble. Welcome to the Mixer podcast. This is the second episode in an eight-part series to coincide with the release of The Mixer, a book written by one of our panellists, Michael Cox, to coincide with the Premier League's 25th season. The book is the story of Premier League tactics from Route 1 to False Nines, is out now in hardback, ebook, and audiobook. Michael Cox is with us. Michael, hello.
Hello, Marcus.
Good to have you with us. Today we're joined by Adam Hurry, who is a football writer for the Daily Telegraph and responsible for the fantastic Football Clichés Twitter account and indeed a book of the same name. Hello, Adam.
Hello, both. How are you?
We're very well. Today we're talking about fullbacks. Michael, the rise of the fullbacks, they've experienced something of a revolution over the past 25 years.
Yes, they've gone from being, I'd say, probably the most unfashionable position in a team to increasingly valued. I remember Gianluca Vialli had a very good theory that the right back was generally the worst player in any team, because if he was a good footballer, he'd be further forward. If he was a good defender, or if he was a better defender, he'd be a centre back. Mm-hmm. And the left back was often like a good left footed player, just played out of position at left back. Mm-hmm. So the right back was the weakest one, he thought, which was probably accurate, I'd say, when he said it, but maybe it's not been so accurate in the time since, you know, not just the Premier League, but you look around Europe, you find someone like Dani Alves, who's a fantastic footballer. They've become slightly sexier players, I'd say, over the past 25 years.
Yeah, and Adam, give us a brief lowdown with regards to what's been going on with fullbacks.
Well, it's interesting what Michael said about Vialli's concept of the right back being the worst player in a team, because I think while that might not apply at the top level anymore, that's certainly the case at Sunday League.
That's right.
Any Sunday League team, which now predominantly 4-4-2 still, fullbacks are quite comfortably the least glamorous position. So if a player turns up out of nowhere, you're almost certainly going to see him playing at fullback. But you know, I think fullbacks more than any other position have experienced this rather quiet evolution over the last couple of decades, where they've gone from being afterthoughts in a classic 4-4-2, this kind of quintessentially British aimless hoof up the line searching for whoever's, you know, nearest to the ball. But they've got to, and this is, you know, perhaps a tactical trend generally, but managers have looked to squeeze as much efficiency as they can out of their players. So there's no room for deadwood anymore. So you have to have these fullbacks who are now, you know, the ultimate multitaskers. They have the most ground to cover in theory, and they have to be pretty much 8 out of 10 going back, 8 out of 10 going forward. So there are huge demands on the modern fullback compared to what they had to do 20 years ago when they would, you know, sit on the periphery and when they were called upon, they had to do their job.
If we go back to the start of the Premier League era in the early 90s, the fullbacks weren't quite so swashbuckling, Michael. Jack Charlton always made a comment that the fullbacks had the most room to manoeuvre, and teams over the years discovered this.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the first Premier League title winners, Manchester United, had Dennis Irwin and Paul Parker at fullback, who were probably more technically minded than many equivalents of the time. But you look at someone like Dennis Irwin, and he was kind of the quintessential fullback. He started out as a right back, switched to the left when Parker came through, and then Gary Neville was there. And it didn't really affect his game too much because he was basically a tackler. He was comfortable in possession. He would overlap now and then, but it wasn't, you know, he wasn't getting to the byline swinging crosses. So the fact that he was switched to the opposite flank didn't really make any difference because it was essentially still a defensive role.
And Stuart Pearce is an obvious one that leaps to mind for a lot of England fans. A player who was known for his fierce tackling, Adam, but also could hit a dead ball as well. And he was a bit more of a, in sort of English terms, it seems quite funny in how to think this, but was more of a, dare I suggest, superstar, but even had a touch of flair at fullback.
Yeah. In Stuart Pearce, we're talking about possibly the most purposeful footballer you can do. Everything he did had an objective at the end of it. I mean, for example, I've never seen anyone run back from a, say, a corner, a set piece, with so much purpose to get back to where he was going. Yeah, Stuart Pearce was the perfect blend of defensive ultra-violence, but then combining that with some, you know, latent attacking threat as well. So everything he did was just absurdly emphatic. But that's what, you know, a superstar fullback has to do. They have to have this X factor. They have to stand out because, you know, they're playing, as we've established, in a quite unglamorous position.
Yeah, and Stuart Pearce, he was a household name, Michael. The penalty shootouts, of course, that added to that as well. But he did chip in with a few goals, did Stuart Pearce. And you can compare that with a fullback like Gary Neville, who was obviously very well known in the 90s and beyond the 90s as well. Very different types of individuals as well as fullbacks, you could argue.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Jamie Carragher once said, I think slightly trying to rile Neville, but he once said that all fullbacks are either failed centre-backs or failed wingers, and I quite like that. But at the start of the Premier League era, they were generally failed centre-backs of the two. You wouldn't get many wing-backs coming back. Mm-hmm. And I think Gary Neville was one of the players like that who maybe didn't quite have the height to be a centre-back and would admit himself that he wasn't the most talented of those players in the class of 92. But I think of everyone in the Premier League era, became probably the most renowned fullback. He's kind of what you want for a fullback. He's, you know, 7 or 8 out of 10 every week. And I think people underestimate how much he developed his game as well in terms of crossing. When he was playing with Beckham, obviously Beckham was the one who was staying out wide and getting the crosses in. But after Beckham left for Real Madrid, you saw more of Neville's overlapping. And, you know, you saw he was a very good footballer and he was putting balls into the box. And he's the kind of player who I think experienced the evolution of fullbacks. He started out as just a defender and increasingly became more technical.
Mm. And it's interesting because, as you say, when he had a little bit more freedom, he could actually do it. He could actually put a decent cross in as well. What about another prominent left back for club and country as well, Graeme Le Saux? He was actually at times underrated as a fullback, Adam. Good player.
Absolutely, but he's a good example of where English football kind of fetishizes the left foot. You know, they are, you know, by nature quite thin on the ground. But we had this obsession with left-footed players, especially in England, because we had in the 90s we had this so-called left-sided problem where we were failing to produce these left-footed players. But, you know, the idea that a left back is inherently more glamorous than a right back because they have this undersung ability.
Yeah, there's a mercurial kind of feel to a left back, and that goes to what Michael was saying about Vialli's quote about the right back. Yeah, right backs, they've been a bit hard done by over the years, perhaps, and until maybe Danny Alves came along, or Cafu, perhaps.
Absolutely. I mean, any good left back tends to have a pretty good delivery, be it a shot from a set piece or a good cross. You don't tend to say that too much about right backs. We're talking about Neville. He was an underrated crosser of the ball, and Euro 96 is a good example of that. But if Neville was in his peak now, he'd probably be a shoe-in for the kind of right side of the three, kind of an Azpilicueta kind of style role, because he was so good at all those defensive roles. But left-backs tend to be, you know, really pigeonholed, and they have to be pretty good. Maybe they had to do that to stand out amongst the crowd as youngsters. They tend to be just rather more spectacular than their right-footed counterparts.
Yeah, Stuart Pearce is an example, and Julian Dix as well. There's something about seeing a left-back run up and hit a ball incredibly hard at the goal. Well, and even if it maybe 1 in 10, 1 in 15 goes in, I mean, even Roberto Carlos, you know, if you look at some of his free kicks, I know I've jumped on a bit there to Roberto Carlos, but the amount of free kicks he had, he didn't actually score that many. But there was something about seeing a left-footed player strike the ball, Michael, that seemed more spectacular than a right-footed player.
Yeah, I mean, I think Carlos and Cafu is a very good example. Personally, I would say that Cafu was much the better player of the two of them. Mm. But because Carlos was left-footed, he was the more spectacular one. I must say, on Graeme Le Saux, actually, from watching all these old 1990s games as research for this book, he was one of the players who really stood out as being quite underrated. And he was really good in big games. Almost every big game I watched, there was a game between Blackburn and Newcastle towards the end of 94-95, which Blackburn won 1-0, and was the game where Tim Flowers was famously going on about bottle after the game. And Blackburn at that point looked really either physically exhausted or just intimidated by their task in those kind of few weeks of the season. It seemed like it was going to slip away from him. And Le Saux was the one who was driving forward again and again and again, and got the cross in to Shearer for the winner. And even when he went to Chelsea as well, there's a couple of games. I mean, there's a 3-3 that's always on Sky Sports Classic, like literally every week. And Le Saux was just incredible there. I think playing left midfield at that point. He was just a really good all-round player. And I think, you know, as everyone's kind of touched on before, was maybe kind of looked down upon because he was a slightly different type of player. In personality terms, he was not your classic 1990s footballer, but was, a really wonderful player.
And played wing-back as well, Graeme Le Saux, for England a few times under Glenn Hoddle, who preferred a slightly more continental approach, I think it's safe to say. And a theme throughout the book is the fact that the Premier League has depended upon foreign influence for its tactical evolution. And you would say that's the case for the fullback, Michael?
To a certain extent, although funnily, I think probably the player who represents how much fullbacks change more than anyone else is Ashley Cole, obviously a homegrown player. And what maybe younger listeners may not know is that Ashley Cole started out as a forward in Arsenal's youth system and was quite disappointed at first when Arsene Wenger and Arsenal's youth coaches said, we've got a vacancy at left back, you're left footed, you're going to go there. And you look at his performances for the first two or three years, I must, you know, admit I wasn't particularly convinced by Ashley Cole at that time, because, you know, Arsenal had been used to having someone like Nigel Winterburn there. Okay, they had Silvinho, who was a bit more of a flair player, but it was just unusual to see an Arsenal left back who wasn't quite solid defensively and was much better going forward. But then you look at his evolution over the course of his career, and by the end, when he'd been at Chelsea, when he played under Mourinho and some other quite defensive-minded managers, and he wasn't overlapping so much, you'd never look at Ashley Cole and say, that's an attack-minded fullback who can't defend. If anything, it was the opposite. He was very solid defensively, and he was very good in possession as well, which I think people don't appreciate. But he wasn't particularly an overlapper or someone who was a spectacular fullback. That's just what a Premier League fullback was.
Yeah, and he did, as Michael says, get to grips with the defensive side of the game so well, and that could often be seen when he came up against Cristiano Ronaldo, Adam.
Absolutely. That was quite a compelling tussle. Fullbacks are always prone to be giving a torrid time. And I think Ronaldo has probably given a few of them nightmares over the years. But Ashley Cole, I think it may have been just pure athleticism at first, which made him, you know, a good foe for Ronaldo. But I think it's quite surprising how quickly he came to grips with the art of defending. I think perhaps it is an underrated skill. I think when you see these wingers being converted to fullback, the assumption is that defending is quite easy to teach. Any coach can get hold of a frustrated winger and turn them into a fullback just by teaching them a few basics. So maybe he is the poster boy for being moved back into his position. But he was incredibly disciplined defender. But I think, as Michael touched on, he wasn't a spectacularly good wide player. He didn't have he couldn't cross a ball very well. Took a very good penalty. But he didn't have the left feet of, you know, a Stuart Pearce or a Julian Dix or even a Graham Massot. None of those. He didn't have the Swiss Army knife of left feet that they did. He was just very functional in an attacking sense. But he loved to overlap. But he was primarily a very, very, very good defender.
Yeah, it's an interesting point about Ashley Cole, because if you do break it down into a player like him into his component parts on an individual basis, it's not that great. But there was something about him that made him one of the best fullbacks in the world, and that idea of putting an attacking player in a defensive position, but often in the reverse, if a defensive player is played as a winger, it often doesn't work, really, does it?
Yeah, I mean, to go back to what Adam said about England's left-sided problem, when we were convinced that you had to be left-footed to play on the left side of midfield, there was a few moments where we'd play two left-backs in tandem. I remember Bridge and Cole playing down at, I think, Southampton.
I think it was.
Was it Macedonia? Maybe. I think it was that game England, where Seaman made the mistake, wasn't it?
I think England got a solid 2-2 draw that
evening. I think we did.
They scored from a corner, didn't they?
That's
right. The Shaqiri went straight in. but that's how obsessed we were with finding a left-footed player. And it's maybe interesting that Cole was never really, that I remember, he was never considered for a left midfield slot, because he became just such a solid defender, despite the fact he started out as a more attacking player. And I think it's interesting as well, if you look back, I mean, the amount of stick Cole got for his move to Chelsea in 2006, which, you know, he didn't handle particularly well. His agent certainly didn't handle it particularly well.
That's right.
And he didn't explain his decisions particularly well when it came to his autobiography as well. But actually, it turned out to be a really good move if you look at, you know, the trajectory of Arsenal and Chelsea over those years. And he struggled a little bit at first at Chelsea. I mean, a lot of Arsenal fans maybe weren't the most impartial judges, but I think it's fair to say Gael Clichy was actually often outperforming Ashley Cole at that point. But then, after a couple of years, Cole just found his role at Chelsea and became a really solid defender. And as Adam says, you know, with the penalties and stuff, he always did it in big games as well, big moments. You can't really think of many Ashley Cole mistakes over the years, which, for a player who's been, you know, 100 caps for England and a Premier League regular for, what, 15 years? Mm. That's quite extraordinary.
And you could argue that for a time he was maybe England's most consistent player. In various tournaments and qualifiers. Other fullbacks around the time of Ashley Cole's rise as well include the likes of, I mean, Patrice Evra, you know, was, I mean, still playing, of course, but what a great player he was for Manchester United. But one or two others, and this feeds into the point of the left backs who do spectacular things, John Arnorisa and Leighton Baines. Now, Leighton Baines, good penalty scorer, can score a free kick. John Arnorisa had a couple of blockbusters as well, one at Anfield against Manchester United. Do you think that the likes of Baines and Reese, would you say that they were good defenders as well as providing that kind of set piece attacking threat?
I think you have to be. I mean, we're talking Baines, for example, was, what is it, his peak sort of late late 2000s into the 2010s. You have to have been a good defender as a foundation for being a fullback. But if you've got a left foot like his and you know, set piece ability, then they kind of work together quite well. But having said that, you know, he never cemented a place in the England team. He never earned that move that everyone suggested he would do. So maybe someone saw something in him that suggested he wasn't quite reliable enough. Reece is probably more one-dimensional, I would suggest. He's known a lot more for his kind of marauding runs down the left and the, you know, that rocket of a left foot. But I don't know. I'm not sure how Liverpool fans think about Reece. I mean, you take someone like Patrice Evra, who when he left, it emerged that he'd actually worked his way into becoming this club legend. I didn't really know of his status while he was there, but in hindsight, they absolutely loved him. Yeah. Absolutely loved him.
One fullback from relatively recent times I thought was interesting was John Flanagan, who maybe hasn't made a massive contribution to the history of the Premier League, but came into that Liverpool season where they nearly won the title.
Flanny Alves.
Yes, exactly. Which I think was an ironic nickname because he wasn't the most spectacular player going forward, but he could play on either side and he was just a real tackler. And it's not often you see players now in any position. Mm-hmm. Maybe N'Golo Kante's changed that a little bit, but his sole attribute really was just tackling. And that meant he could play right back or left back. And he was defensively solid on either side. Going forward, not so much. But I think in that Liverpool side, they had so many men going forward and they were leaving gaps at the back. He was a kind of throwback fullback who kind of just made sense for that kind of system. I thought he was really interesting to have that, I guess, a kind of Dennis Irwin kind of fullback.
Yeah, and the kind of fullback that would maybe benefit from simple Brian Clough or Harry Redknapp-esque instructions of, you know, win every header and don't let the winger cross the ball or something. But it's interesting you say he played on either flank because he was quite well adept. The job was quite simple. And we have seen this, Adam, fullbacks playing on either side. You know, we've mentioned wingers, how they can be inverted and so on, but the fullback can as well.
Absolutely.
Well,
this is perhaps, you know, another hangover from the period where they were considered very unglamorous players because, you know, they'll do whatever they're told and a fullback will play wherever he's put. The ultimate example for me would be Mourinho moving Gallas over to the left out of necessity, I think it was, because they just simply couldn't find a left back at that stage. And so watching it looks really awkward. You're watching a very right-footed player playing at left back and you start to have some real sympathy with them because they're not really sure what to do. You end up running around in circles a little bit, but he did his very, very best. He made the best of what he had. And I remember one goal against Spurs at Stamford Bridge when he cut it inside and hammered one into the top corner from 30 yards. And I thought, well, that's the ultimate achievement for a fullback playing on the wrong side. So he certainly made the best of it. So, yeah, fullbacks will do whatever they're told, basically.
Yeah, and the way Mourinho celebrated that, it was he was taking partial credit, was he? But it was interesting. When we spoke earlier about certain fullbacks, we would think of them as primarily defenders. And we would say, yeah, excellent defenders. You wouldn't really mention a fullback going forward. You wouldn't really talk about their attacking strengths, perhaps, unless it was a good set piece and so on with some of the aforementioned players. But then there was a little bit of a shift, perhaps, where people would say, oh, he's a good fullback, or questionably defensively. But people would then recognise, Michael, that the fullback was there to attack as well. And some fullbacks were seen as better attackers than defenders.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it does feel like there's two very different types of fullback. And I'd probably argue there's been a slight defensive shift over the past couple of years. If you look at the last two title winners, you know, Chelsea under Mourinho that season, he played Azpilicueta on the left. Obviously, he was right foot and tucking in. And Ivanovic was a centre-back on the right. So they were, you know, not really going forward very much, certainly not at the same time. And then you look at Leicester last year, of course. I mean, Leicester are the kind of caveats to everything. They disprove every kind of rule. But again, Leicester evolved into title winners when they ditched Delatt and Jeffrey Schlupp, who were flying forward all the time, and brought in Fuchs and Danny Simpson, who basically just sat back and were told you're not allowed to overlap unless Leicester are chasing the game. They need a goal. And, you know, there's even been some other shifts. I mean, you look at the fact that everyone's moved towards a back three. That's changed fullbacks because they're now either wing-backs or they're centre-backs. And Azpilicueta, again, is quite interesting because he's, I would have thought, would be a prime candidate actually to be a wing-back. But he's so good defensively that he's played very well as a, you know, one of the back three.
Yeah, that when you're talking about back threes and back fours, Adam, there was a phase in the 90s where English clubs and the England football team, as I think we mentioned before under Glenn Hoddle, went for a back three. And that's back in vogue now in English football.
Yeah.
And so that changes the fullback dynamic, doesn't it? Because you've got fullbacks, then you've got wing backs, and what Antonio Conte is doing with playing, you know, a 3-4-3. again, that is not two traditional wide men. Mm. They are essentially wing backs as well. It's a position that has evolved and then gone back and then gone forward, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I've been pleasantly surprised to see the return of a 3-5-2 and its variants, because the mid-90s, I don't think it got a decent crack at it, because there were a couple of teams who did it, you know, to reasonable success. I think Ruud Gullit, you know, implemented a 3-5-2 at Chelsea. Then you had all sorts of teams just copying, and then Swindon were doing it, Villa, all sorts of teams, and then they were chucking anyone out on the wings. But Villa had little Alan Wright out on their left as a wing back, and that's an awful lot of ground to cover when you're 5-4. So this resurgence of it now, I think there's a lot more thought behind it now. The wing backs still have the same workload, they're still covering as much distance, but I think there's a lot more tactical discipline involved. Azpilicueta probably would be, as Michael said, would be a very good wingback, but I don't think he's actually that good going forward. He's far too good a defender to be wasted out on a wingback. I think he is the ultimate right-sided of the three. But funnily enough about Azpilicueta is he was an attacking fullback as a youth. He tore his cruciate ligament at Marseille, and part of his rehabilitation was that he became so much stronger than he was before. He built up all his leg muscles, and he committed himself to being a more defensive fullback. Then Chelsea signed him, and the rest seems to be history, because I'd say he's probably the best defensive fullback in the Premier League when he has to play there. Mm.
And if we're looking in the Premier League at the moment, the way Pochettino plays his fullbacks, and we know what Guardiola doing something slightly different. Do you think fullbacks now, there is a complete expectation that even if they are in a back four, they are essentially kind of like wing backs, really?
Yeah, I think that's been a big shift over the past few years.
Like a Brazilian kind of style, because they've been doing that for years.
Yes, and I think the Guardiola thing, I mean, it's slightly different to anything we've seen before, with them drifting inside to become extra central midfielders. But the funny thing is, if you look at the evolution of every Premier League position, from strikers to centre-backs to even goalkeepers, down the spine, everyone's talked about them becoming more comfortable in possession. But it's like full-backs are still just judged on attacking and defending. Mm-hmm. And I think some players, some really top-level players, certainly Ashley Cole, I think one at the moment is Hector Bellerin at Arsenal, are actually really good in possession. And if they were to play at a lesser team, probably could play central midfield, and they're just so comfortable. People don't really consider their actual passing ability for a fullback. You never really hear someone say he's a good fullback, he's actually a very good passer.
Yeah.
But they're involved so much in the play, they often see as much of the ball as anyone else. And just being, 10% better at passing than, your rival for first team place, I think can be a really big boost just to improve how a team plays.
Yeah, and that's true enough, isn't it, Adam? And to take someone who's not in the Premier League, someone like David Alaba, who plays fullback for his club and then sometimes for his country, he has played in the centre of midfield. And we see it's a great appreciation for the football playing fullback. They are treated as footballers as well, if you know what I mean by that. Absolutely. You're not sort of patronised. And as you said much earlier, it's not just, right, you get it and you hit it down the line, which you could probably get on a Sunday morning, but at the top level of the game in the Premier League, fullbacks are treated like ball players, like hopefully a lot of the other side is.
I think they're finally getting the recognition they deserve. I mean, it used to be the case, if you're once a fullback, you were always a fullback. Bayern Munich have been blessed with the fact that they've had two notable fullbacks who are now established themselves in other positions and in extreme cases move them into central midfield. So Philipp Lahm and Alaba as well. The idea of a fullback being used in central midfield was unheard of back in the day. I remember perhaps Phil Neville, who played pretty much every position under the sun at one point. But he was sort of in the mid-90s, he was a kind of a backup fullback. And then Ferguson deployed him as a man marker for Zola at Stamford Bridge, I think. And he did an incredible job. But so he was going around everywhere. And so, it was, a slightly subservient role in the grand scheme of things, but it showed a fullback, that they're a lot more useful than they appear. I'm delighted to see that the fullbacks, I hope they're getting as much money as everyone else as well.
Give fullbacks a chance. That's what we're saying here. Absolutely. We need to appreciate the fullbacks more. But it was mentioned earlier, Jack Charlton, who said in the 90s, didn't he, that the fullback was actually quite a crucial position. And then so many people said they're the ones with the space in front of them, and they recognise that, Michael. And we've seen that evolve over the years in the Premier League.
Yeah, that seemed to be a big development at that time. And I think it's worth pointing out as well that if you were playing as a fullback in a 4-4-2, in Premier League terms, you were only going to come across 4-4-2s, 3-5-2s. So whichever system that was, you would have lots of space in front of you. You didn't really see 4-3-3s at that time. I think when teams started playing 4-3-3, then, oh, hang on, you've got a really good player up against you. You might have someone like Ronaldo up against you. Then you're going to have to be defensively solid. But I think in that time, in the mid, late 90s, even the start of the 2000s, you did have space and you didn't have players directly breaking against you. So you had a little bit of recovery time as well. So it's been a really interesting position in terms of the evolution. Again, maybe not the most glamorous position, but, you know, a classic example of how a player had to be had to become a multifaceted footballer, really. Had to be good attacking, defending, good in possession. And yet people always still say it's the one position you have to be consistent as well. So you can't even have, you know, errors or games where you're not in it. You have to be really solid.
Yeah. Would you say that the fullback is kind of, if you were to use it in band terms, he's the drummer? The one who's the least appreciated, but yet utterly crucial, sets the tempo and all that kind of stuff. You know, maybe the fullback's been hard done by over the years, Adam.
Well, they also serve a very crucial role, which is, you know, often goes unnoticed, but they're the chief haranguers of linesmen because they're always the nearest to them. So they do a lot of appealing for so, you know, Ashley Cole, for example, perfected the art of yeah. haranguing officials. So that it's an occupational hazard. You're going to get a lot of yellow cards just purely for where you are on the pitch.
That's true. That's very true. Michael, as always, I'm going to ask you to name who you think the key player in the evolution of the fullback has been.
I'm going to go for Ashley Cole, again, for reasons already stated, but I think the fact that he was an attacker when he was starting out, he became a defender, and then within 3 or 4 years, you didn't say, hey, that's an attacker out of position. That was just what the fullback had become. There aren't many English revolutionaries in terms of the history of Premier League tactics, but I think Ashley Cole is one.
Yeah, Adam, you were nodding your head as Michael was saying that.
Absolutely. I mean, for all his contribution to the tactical evolution of the fullback, it's just his sheer engine. You know, his sheer natural attributes, which certainly not many other English fullbacks could match.
Indeed. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Mixer podcast. Michael Cox is The Mixer. The story of Premier League tactics from Route 1 to False Nines is out now in hardback, ebook, and audiobook. I'm Marcus Speller. Thanks very much to Michael Cox and Adam Hurry for joining me. Please join us next time when we'll be shifting inside to look at centre-backs.